Welcome to episode 15 of season 2 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Monday the 12th of October 2009, and in this episode we're going to review some books we've had reading, apparently.
Had reading, yes.
See, I can't read, that's why I haven't got a book. We'll cover the latest news and events. We've got news about Og Camp, the premier thing going on up north somewhere.
On that day.
Yes, in Wolverhampton, followed by another command line, love. Simon just looked at me as if to say, no, we haven't. Then the second of our interviews from Os Bar Camp in Dublin, and we delve into the ecosphere. Finally, we have your feedback. I'm Alan. With me this week is Tony.
Hiya, mate. You all right?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thank you for trekking up to Studio B.
Yes, we're back in Ubuntu UK Podcast Studio B, aka Alan's Den. It's tidied up. It's great. I can get in.
Yes, aside from this big stack of drinks,
yeah,
I'm seeing here.
We have the Og Camp drink stack in here, and I'm leaving it with Alan for 2 weeks until the event. I'm not sure this is a wise move or not. But
yeah, you might have to count them in again.
Oh, yes.
So what have you been up to then, other than buying cans of drink?
Well, mostly running around sorting out stuff for Og Camp, I have to say, and like Radio Live as well. So I haven't really done much computing-wise, but mostly trying to find bits of PA kit and microphones and video stands and all that sort of stuff.
Are we set? Are we ready?
We're pretty much ready, yeah.
It's two weeks, isn't it?
It is 2 weeks. Yeah, it'll be about a week and a half by the time this comes out on the mirrors. A bit scary, but it's going to be great. We're looking forward to it. I went up to London on Saturday and met up with Dan from the Linux Outlaws. We went to see Kevin Smith do
a... You had an impromptu mandate
with Dan. So that was really good. We sort of met up a bit before, had a bit of a chat about our camp and, you know, find out what we're all going to do and... Yeah, it's really good.
Excellent. Yeah. So you guys have sorted it out for us.
Yeah, that's right. What am I going to do? You're going to come along and work.
Turn up and be beautiful. That's all you need to do.
Come along, rig PA.
Cool. Thank you. And I don't know why I said thank you. We never say that, do we?
That's fine. I don't object to being thanked.
I'll thank you anyway.
Go on then.
Simon.
Hello.
What have you been up to then?
Nothing.
Excellent. Laura.
No, I haven't really. I've been trying not to use a computer, I have to say. They take over your life.
What are you talking about?
Only the really intelligent ones. They took over the
now
whole
I try
world.
Not to use them too much. All I've done really is update a spare box to Karmic just to see what's going on.
Desktop or laptop?
Desktop.
What do you think of it?
It's Ubuntu.
Did it work?
Yeah.
Did the upgrade break?
Nope.
Oh,
I haven't tested sound though. I haven't got any speakers plugged into that thing.
Okay. So. But it smooth enough.
Yeah, do release upgrade, did it, yeah.
Notice anything different?
Not really.
All right.
Mr. Apathetic over there.
Did you actually turn it on? After the upgrade, or are you upgrading?
Yeah, I try not to let them get it. All my life.
You've got to be the only person who hasn't commented on the fading down, shutdown screen thing.
See, when I hit power down and walk away, I'll walk away. I don't sit there and go, oh, look, it's shutting down.
Some of us worry that if we hit the power button and then put our laptops in our bags, that they overheat and burn through the bag.
Yeah, there is that.
Laura, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
By the way, thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
What have you been up to?
Thanks, Simon.
Not a huge amount, but I spent a bit of time on Saturday buying stationery for Og Camp.
Stationery?
Yes.
Stationery?
Really? Stationery.
How am I not involved in any of this?
I don't know.
It's on the wiki.
Yeah, there is a big list on the wiki. All you've got to do is say, oh, yeah, I'll do that bit.
It's quite good because I like stationery.
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of stationery? Have we got like a glut of staplers or something?
No, I've got some marker pens and we've got some paper so that we can draw up a schedule.
Ah, that's handy.
Sticky notes. So people can sign up for things and stick them on the schedule and then we can move them around a bit if necessary.
Have we got nice stickers that people can write their names on and stick them on their foreheads?
Name badges.
Well volunteered.
Damn. Oh dear.
We've got some blue tack as backup, just because everyone needs blue tack.
Of course, yeah.
And somewhere to put...
Money?
Yeah, money.
That's the one.
Yes.
A wallet? Yes.
Ah, this brings us to...
Well, we can talk about this a little bit later, maybe, in the camp section.
Oh,
yes. Hold that thought.
Throw ahead, yeah. Very good.
I'm planning.
What have you been up to, Alan?
I went to my local lug on Saturday. Our local lug. You remember that?
Meow.
We went last month.
We did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Unlike you.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
All three of us.
You went to a wedding or something.
That's right, yes.
Supposedly.
Very important, yes.
So how is it Nokia, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at Nokia in Farnborough.
And, oh, this was at IBM.
So you went to the one that was about 2 minutes from your house?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Like we did.
Yeah, not the one that's 50 miles from my house. Yeah, I went to like 2 miles. Anyway, I just did a 10-minute talk about what's new in Karmic. See, I've made a note.
Oh, right.
I've looked. I know. And, just showed them a few new things and stuff. And, yeah.
Including the shutdown screen.
They saw that because by accident, I was trying to show them the notification thing by turning the volume up and down on my laptop to make it pop up. And I hit the button that makes it shut down instead. And, so they got to see the shutdown screen. So, yeah.
It was right. Thrilling.
And I had a bug fixed. And I want to say thank you to Daniel Chen, who fixed the bug. It wasn't actually a bug, but I reported a bug, and it was a problem with sound on Karmic on my laptop. And it turns out it was something related, but yeah, I know.
It was just the infamous with the message that was rude.
No, not that one. Right, okay. No, not that one.
Okay, that's all right then.
No, not that one. Although that one's quite funny.
Yeah.
I had a problem with sound, and it turns out it was the modem driver.
Oh.
And I had to remove the modem driver because it was holding onto the sound card. As soon as I removed the modem driver, bing, it carried on working.
Modem. That is retro.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I didn't even know I had one.
Now, Eddie, Davey isn't here this week, so...
Eddie.
Not only is he not here, we've changed his name.
Yeah, he's not here, that's why Laura's here.
Not why Laura's here. Laura is official backup.
He is in the West Country somewhere. So somebody's going to have to say the famous catchphrase.
Or we could just not.
Okay, let's not. We've got a couple of book reviews this episode. Laura's read one and Simon's read one. So Simon can go first because his book was published first.
And I've had it for a while.
On that basis. What's the book?
Right, the book is Front End Drupal.
By?
He says, looking to the right. It's Emma Jane Hogbin's book with, help me out. Constantin Kaffer.
Kaffer, yeah. Anyway. Emma Jane, of course, we did interview on the show back. We interviewed her at Fosdem. In fact, we interviewed her in the Eurostar on the way back from Fosdem. Near the toilets again.
Was that this year?
Yeah, it was this
okay.
Year. Was it that long ago?
It was 6 months ago at least.
Frightening.
Yeah.
So, Front End Drupal, what's it about? I'll read through what I've written because that's the best way to review the book.
Okay.
Right, so I'm an inexperienced Drupal user. I have one installation and a fairly stock theme. I found this book has something for Drupal users of all levels. It covers everything from the basics of web page design and installation of Drupal before describing how it can be modified to provide a site that is more visually appealing than the vanilla installation. Yeah. Primarily, it's aimed at those who want to develop their own Drupal theme, and it gives an overview of how Drupal is built, the code types you'll be getting involved with, and suggested ways to work with that code. So that's the first sort of paragraph I've written. It really does go into the absolute basics of how to write a simple web page, static HTML. And it'll develop on that, go into XHTML, CSS, and PHP, and how they work within Drupal. There's code examples, there's lists of sites to go to get themes, and how you can, in fact, tweak them. My main concern with Drupal is the fact that it's all text. On WordPress and things like that, you can easily put graphics into the sidebars and stuff.
Yeah, it's got a sort of click-and-draggy Ajax-y thing.
Well, you can't do that easily with Drupal.
You have to know a bit of HTML and PHP to do that.
Yeah, exactly, to get it integrated. I have no idea. I've done a bit of sort of Googling, but I couldn't work out how to do it. And this book goes into the details of how you can do that.
Okay. Does that mean you would say Drupal itself is a less friendly thing to work with than WordPress, perhaps?
Definitely. But then Drupal's so much more than WordPress.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're going to use it, I mean, I deliberately started it to get experience with Drupal. Mm. I've already got a WordPress blog going, and Drupal was an experiment to literally get me experience of using it.
And did that go through the installation and all that kind of stuff?
It does. It goes interestingly, right at the back of the book, it's got about installation of Drupal from, you know, how you do it, which is quite useful. Essentially, it's a primer. It covers everything to do with Drupal, gives you examples of everything to do with Drupal, and places to go to get more. So it's an excellent book.
Is it like a bunch of how-to guides all the way through the book, or is it like how to set up your Drupal site to do this, or is it more like lots of explanations?
It's how to explanations and how to expand all the areas of Drupal itself.
Cool.
So do you think you could sit down and create your own theme based on the principles that the book covers?
Definitely.
Cool.
All right.
Have I?
Well, no. I wasn't going to ask.
No, because, well, you know, life's short and there's always 800,000 other things going on.
Yeah, sure. So it just sort of explains the concepts and you see, I've looked at WordPress themes and you create a style sheet that's got all the content in it and basically everything is within the style sheet and an index page where you say which blocks you want where. Is that similar to
Drupal? You can do it that way, certainly. But it goes into the depths of how every single page works. And the other thing, of course, with Drupal is that being a content management system, you've got users of varying levels of access. And
does it cover the security side?
Yeah,
thing,
yeah.
It? Oh, wow.
And
okay.
It covers the private areas of the site. So you can have the public area and then restricted areas depending on user level, and it goes into that as well.
Oh, that's good, because that's a bit that I don't know much about, the whole roles and stuff with Drupal. And
yeah, so you can have separate areas. So we can have, I could set up a site so you two could get into it, into one particular private part, and then Tony could get into the other, and it will be locked off from each other. So it really is quite an in-depth.
And is it based, do you know what version of Drupal it's based on? Is it 5 or 6?
I think it's 5, but because it covers migrating to Drupal 6. As well.
So it's really much more than just a book about theming and styles. It's a whole administration on Drupal.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because, it paints itself as a front-end Drupal. It says designing, theming, and scripting, but it's just so much more than that.
All right. So would you recommend this book to someone else?
Oh, yeah. If you're starting out with Drupal, I'd definitely point you at this book.
So it covers the basics.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How much of a real coder person do you have to be?
It's got examples in there.
Okay.
You don't have to be at all, literally cut and paste.
And so what was your experience before? So we know
before
your
Before Drupal?
No, before that book, of experience of Drupal and style sheets and PHP and all. Really?
None.
So right
touched
from
on
zero
it.
To...
Yep.
Right. That's
had
really
a look
good.
And that was it.
Excellent.
Pretty good.
Okay, cool. We'll keep listening, and we're going to give away the book in a competition a bit later in the episode.
Not my book.
A pre-thumbed book.
No, we have another copy.
We should.
Have we?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
Somewhere.
Somewhere.
Somewhere in Studio A.
Yeah, Studio A somewhere. There's a copy.
Studio A storeroom.
Yeah. And we also have another book, which has been reviewed by Laura.
We do. Called Beginning Ubuntu, published by A Press. Yes.
It's written by the same guy who did the Ubuntu Kung Fu, Keir Thomas.
Ah.
Ubuntu
Kung
Fu.
Oh, it is as well.
Yeah. There you go.
Kung Fu.
As we like to
Kung
say.
Kung Fu.
Okay.
Yeah, the bit that I found amusing was it had the license agreement at the back for the CD saying it was a single-user license.
What's on the CD? Fail. Ubuntu, presumably.
It's every flavour of the current version of Ubuntu, I think.
By flavour, you mean?
Zubuntu, Kubuntu, Ubuntu.
Right. Serverbuntu.
I don't know what the exhaustive list is, but that's what it reckons to.
Okay. So it's more than a CD, presumably.
It's a DVD.
Ah.
Yes.
Excellent. But you can, actually use it on more than one machine.
You would hope so.
You'd hope so, yeah. I just thought it was quite amusing. They put the standard
Copy
license.
And paste.
Yeah.
So who's the book aimed at, you think?
Right. Well, this is what I spent a lot of time trying to work out. Because it's called Beginning Ubuntu, which kind of implies that it starts from scratch, and it does. I think I concluded that it's aimed, and I think it does this well, it's aimed at somebody who has geek tendencies.
Okay.
In a kind of domestic world or in a professional world, you're working in an IT department and you want to learn about Linux or Ubuntu, you're starting from scratch and it tells you the philosophy, why you'd use Linux, and then how to change from a Mac to Linux or Windows to Linux.
Oh, right.
It's really comprehensive and it goes through absolutely everything. The reason it took me a while to kind of work it out, because I kind of assumed that beginning Ubuntu meant like beginning, getting up and running, that kind of thing.
What, zero? Absolute zero?
Yeah, but just somebody as a user wanting to use it, not having to wade through all the philosophy and everything.
I guess that's tricky. every Ubuntu book has that whole philosophy section and what does Ubuntu mean at the front. I guess you kind of have to have it.
You do, but it's kind of making you do all your homework before you realise what the point of doing it is.
Right.
It's not doing that kind of grab you and then make you want to know more. But as I say, I think it's more aimed more at somebody who wants at a professional level, or they're a bit geeky, interested in that kind of thing anyway. Because in chapter 9 it talks about generating encryption keys and shell stuff in chapter 13. And then doesn't cover things like playing music until chapter 18.
Wow.
Chapter 19. Okay. And then photos, chapter 20, and office, open office, which is probably one of the most used things in chapter 21. So
is it more beginning Linux for system admins, perhaps?
Yeah, or help desk support or something was kind of the conclusion I came to. And I think it did that very well.
So probably the listeners to this podcast that we don't know everyone who listens to this podcast, and we can't really generalise, but, you know, what we would expect, you know, technical people who, you know, tend to listen to podcasts, those kind of people.
Yeah, like I say, I mean, somebody who sort of supports Windows, say, as their job and sort of help desk type thing, it's that kind of skill level, I think, but they're wanting to move into Linux or whatever, and this tells them everything they might need to know. Including things like OpenOffice and that they might need to support.
And it's quite a chunky book.
Is it?
I mean, you've rattled off some of the things that are in some of the chapters. Is it comprehensive, or is it like an overview of Play Music and an overview of OpenOffice and an overview of SSH and that kind of stuff? Or is it fairly detailed?
I think it's fairly comprehensive. It's certainly like a good starter in each of those areas. But yeah, it's about 700 pages, including the appendices.
Wow. And is it a big bunch of screenshots? Like, you know, your average Windows-y book is often like...
So thick because it's full of screenshots.
Yeah, exactly. It does. As you're flicking through it, it looks mostly text, actually.
Yeah, it's not like it's overloaded with screenshots and shows like some examples of shell commands and things, but I think there's a lot of text in there, which is the other reason why I don't think it's your kind of average end-user introduction, because it's just like a doorstop for that.
Yeah. So it's written in fairly technical language. It's not aimed at... I mean, could a non-technical person pick it up and wade through it, do you think?
That's the thing. I think some aspects of it, yes.
Okay.
Because it's explained very clearly and very basically.
So it could be a beginner's book. Could be. But it'd be a slow, you know, read a chapter, have a play for a month or two. And then.
But they might lose interest if, like you say, OpenOffice is right in chapter 20. You know, would a novice user think... hang on.
Yeah.
And there's no reason they can't just skip page chapters, but if they don't know what they're doing, then they won't know what they can and can't skip. Whereas I'd say they could easily skip the bash script bit. And
it covers bash.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think one thing that I didn't like too much, just as a specific little thing, was the fact that it says Linux puts you in charge. You're the mechanic as well as the driver, and you'll be expected to get your hands dirty every now and then. And while that may be true, it's not a good starting point, I felt, unless you're a sysadmin-y help desk support, in which case that's fair enough to say, which is why I think I sort of came to this conclusion that it's somebody who knows this kind of thing.
Mm. Well, I guess it's okay to be upfront about the fact that, you know, it's not, I mean, the fact that the book isn't complete screenshots all the way through, and there is going to be snippets of script and talks about SSH and stuff that is, you know, quite geeky. You kind of want to prepare them early on that, hey, this is not just, you know, point and click your way through the whole experience, is it?
I mean, the book isn't designed to be an advocacy tool. It's designed to teach people how to use a piece of software.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
it's going to hopefully set out the truth rather than spin. Yeah,
it's quite advocacy-like, I think. But it does say using Linux requires commitment and the realisation that there are probably going to be problems and they need to be overcome. And I thought, could you just skip that line?
Big disclaimer, do not use this software.
So, and one thing actually, and I wrote this down, and I don't think I got this out of the book, I think this is just like a feeling that occurred to me when I was reading this on the bus, is that Windows isn't the biggest threat, Apple is.
That's the feeling you got from the book?
Yeah, and I can't remember where I got this from, but I was obviously very strongly feeling this at that point.
Yeah.
Because Apple just works, it's nice to use, well-designed and doesn't break. And Ubuntu's good, and it's like switching from Windows to Mac in terms of differences. You have to get accustomed to it, but the payback on Mac is greater. And I think that was because of the kind of things that came out. Possibly it was just that first chapter, it's chapter 3, that it just sort of put me in that frame of mind. But maybe I was just being philosophical because it was too early in the morning.
That's still quite damning, isn't it? You know, after all these years, you know, are we still saying that about Ubuntu? I mean, I don't want to pull away from the, you know, the book review, but that's quite a damning statement.
Well, it reminds me of what we had chatted with Matthew Paul Thomas last episode,
Was it he said?
Maybe it was a combination of that.
In order to overtake them, you've got to catch up with them first.
Exactly.
Yeah, I quite like that.
Yeah.
So just going back to the book, we said that the DVD's got all the different versions of Ubuntu, mm-hmm. Xubuntu, Kubuntu. Does it cover all of them, or does it really just focus on the GNOME or GNOME desktop
version? Or does it do just the generic stuff?
Yeah, it's just Ubuntu, really, but I didn't get the impression it was very specific at all. Okay. It's just, I mean, it covers a lot of the software and a lot of the, it's all very generic stuff, yeah. I think, to a Debian system.
Given there's not much in the way of screenshots, it's not going to show loads of Ubuntu stuff and then miss out all the KDE equivalents or something, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just quite a lot of software to cover in one of the desktops, never mind three different desktops plus.
Yeah, but what did you say? You said OpenOffice, playing music. Does it, I mean, in the playing music section, is it going to talk about Rhythmbox and Amarok?
Yeah.
Or is it just going to talk about Rhythmbox?
I don't know, I can't remember.
But yes, I mean, there's a lot of different options, and the question that...
It is a big book.
But the question I'd be asking as a user is, well, why have I got four different tools to play my MP3s?
Oh, blimey, yeah.
No, it just... Sorry.
Spin to the philosophy section and understand why.
And read a little subsection on choice.
Is there such a section?
There's a Ubuntu replacements for Windows section, which is quite nice. So it goes through and says, like, word processing, OpenOffice, Writer... Right. Music, Rhythmbox, photo editing, GIMP.
Okay.
That's quite handy.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a migration. It can help someone migrate.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I think the kind of the help desky type of support person is perfect for it. Somebody who's used to Windows.
Or maybe like a real Windows power user.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, Windows geek.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds good. So
for that kind of person, it's perfect, I think, because like I say, it does cover a lot, and it covers enough that when they want to know more, they're in the right direction. So,
cool. Yeah. Excellent. Are we going to give away this book as well?
Yeah. Okay. I'm not carrying it home again.
Excellent. So keep listening, and we'll have another competition with that as a prize as well. Let's start the news.
The Business Software Alliance have released a report that claims that 41% of software installed on people's computers is illegal, pirated software.
Oh, like...
What should we do?
Sounds about right. I mean, as I said before, that's part of the reason I came to Linux.
Oh, to get away from all of that.
Yeah, to get away from the culture of ripped-off software.
There's not that much pirated software on Ubuntu or Linux in general.
Well, there might be if people... download it and install it and run it, like games. People download stuff off peer-to-peer networks and stuff.
Yeah, I suppose. And music. You could use things like Crossover to install pirated versions of Windows applications.
And some people actually pirate Crossover.
Really?
Because it's a pay-for app, isn't it? It's not open source, is it?
Pirated versions of Windows running VirtualBox or something.
Yeah, there's another one. Yeah, people pirate the beta releases of Windows 7. Run in a virtual machine. It happens everywhere. Tony, open your eyes.
You wouldn't steal a handbag, don't steal a film.
No idea what you just said.
The London Stock Exchange have switched from a Microsoft.NET trading platform to one based on Linux. Granted, they bought the entire company, so they now own the platform they run on, but it's on Linux, so that's good, right?
Yeah, I guess.
They had all sorts of problems with the .NET version.
Did they?
Apparently. And I used to see in the trade rags, there were full-page adverts saying that London Stock Exchange runs on SQL Server 2005 and all this sort of stuff. That didn't last so long. Apparently they had an outage for like a whole day, which is not a good thing when you're a stock exchange.
Oh, ouch. That's quite bad.
Oops.
Well, Linux rocks.
Popular file hosting site Mediafire has requested that Mozilla remove a Firefox extension called SkipScreen from the site, claiming it breaches Mediafire's acceptable use policy. With the EFF getting involved and Mozilla backing SkipScreen, the fight continues.
It's quite cool, SkipScreen. It's you know these websites where you have what's it called? Well, Mediafire is one of them,
right,
where you can upload humongous files. And then if I give you the link, you go to their site and they give you two options. One is download it for free off of our really, really slow servers or pay
like
us.
Like RapidShare.
RapidShare is another one. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And RapidShare is also supported by SkipScreen. Uh-huh. And what it does is if I have SkipScreen installed and I click a link to download something, I can just leave the browser counting down the 45 seconds or whatever,
right,
and I can flick to another tab and carry on doing what I'm doing,
uh-huh,
and when it finishes counting down, skip screen detects and then moves on to the next screen and tells the browser to download the file. So I don't have to click anything. You don't have to watch the adverts. You don't have to do anything. It skips the adverts, skips the countdown. Well, it doesn't skip the countdown. It still has to do the countdown, but you don't have to watch it and wait for the end. It's quite a cool thing. Mediafire went nuts because it means users don't look at their site. They just click the links and then wait for the browser and then bing, they get their file.
To be honest, the few times I've had to use sites like that anyway, I'd leave the countdown running, look at something else in another tab and pop back in a couple of minutes. So I don't spend 2 minutes looking at the adverts.
If you come back too late, it times out and it won't let you download it. It saves all of that. So they're quite nice. Yeah,
but yeah,
I can see why Mediafire are getting fancy about it.
That's all they do, isn't it?
Destroys their business model, really.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Well, it doesn't really. The business model is still there. It's just we've got a sneaky way around it.
Yeah, but if everyone does that, then that's their revenue down the pan.
Yeah, that's the trouble with ad-based revenue in general, isn't it? People have got ad block.
Yeah, but it's subscription-based as well. And that you're getting around the annoyance factor, which is what you're paying for in the subscription model.
Yeah.
So it's not even pushing people towards the subscription.
Exactly.
Well, they just have to think up a better feature that people would pay for.
I think the other thing they're getting annoyed about is after you download the file, it takes you to a page that says, thanks for using Skip Screen. So it's like, thank you for using RapidShare or Mediafire or something. Thanks for not using that other site. Oh, by the way, that's where you got it from.
Lug Radio Live 2009 is in a week and a bit. By the time you get this, 24th of October.
Calculate the date from when we release.
He probably knows the hours.
Yeah, tell me about it. New Hampton Arts Centre in sunny Wolverhampton.
Excellent, we're all going, aren't we?
Yep.
Hi.
Yep.
See you there.
I've got to drive a car full of cans of drink up there. Make sure nobody drinks them and Lug Radio. Hang on, I've got to drive around the whole weekend with those in the boot of my car.
You're staying in a hotel, aren't you?
Yeah, but I'm not going to take them out of the car and put them in the hotel.
Oh,
and then
you do.
Put them back in the car.
Are they not in the hotel? You're not staying at the same hotel as everybody else?
What, you think I'm going to cart all of those up to my room?
Yep.
They don't have lifts?
The cleaners are going to think I'm really weird having all these cases of drink in my room.
We normally have shed loads of videos and stuff.
Yeah. Of the two options, you know, who's going to look more weird?
Even when we were in San Francisco for Lug Radio Live, we had videos and microphones and stuff.
That could have looked a bit dodgy.
Yep.
All around the world, starting on the 29th of October, there are comic release parties.
Yes. Ooh. And you can find out where they are if you visit houseparty.cx, which is a domain I registered.
Really?
Yeah. Because you know the Windows 7 release parties?
Yeah, houseparty.com
/ Windows 7 or something. So I registered houseparty.cx, and it points to the wiki page that lists all the release parties around the world.
Excellent.
I thought it was a nice and easy way to remember.
Awesome. There's a comedy gig for the benefit of Bletchley Park at the Bloomsbury Theatre in London on the 3rd. Of November, which is a Tuesday, with Richard Herring, Robert Llewellyn, Robin Ince, and maybe Stephen Fry.
We keep giving this one and saying maybe Stephen Fry. Is he going to actually confirm at some point?
I don't know. He might.
He's all being a bit showbiz.
Yeah, keeping everyone on their toes.
I've just checked the website. It's sold out anyway, so might as well stop. Oh no! Apparently, you can stand. There's still standing tickets. Sorry, it's the seats that are sold out.
Right. FOSDEM is on the 6th to the 7th of February next year at l'Université Libre Brussels. Are we going?
That's far too soon.
Far too soon to be thinking about it.
Yeah, well, I'll think about it. But, you know, plans always change.
It'll come around quicker than you think.
Yeah. I know some people book the Eurostar already.
Every year, I'll book the Eurostar, book the hotel, and then end up not going.
Oh, no.
Oh,
You and Davey.
Try and drag him this time.
It's our last episode before the wondrous event that is Og Camp.
Scary.
Yeah. You're not sweating one bit.
Yeah, no, not at all. Let's play the trailer and then talk about it afterwards.
Oi, our theme's better.
No, it's not.
I think you've broken it now.
Guys, maybe we should get on with the promo?
Are you wondering what you're going to do with that spare day after Lug Radio Live this year?
So were we.
But then we had a brainwave.
I've wondered what that burning smell was.
Why not run a joint Barcamp-esque event nearby on the Sunday?
So nearby, in fact, that it'll be in the Connaught Hotel in Wolverhampton, the official Lug Radio Live hotel.
It's called Og Camp. No, not Odd Camp. That's Og with two G's.
Odd Camp might be more appropriate, though.
There'll be all kinds of talks going on during the afternoon. You can talk too if you want to.
Plus, there'll be a live recording from each podcast in the main room.
Ubuntu UK and Linux Outlaws under one roof.
So put it in your diaries now. Sunday, October 25th at the Connaught Hotel in Wolverhampton.
Visit ogcamp.org for full details.
Sounds like a fun-packed event.
I love that trailer. We haven't just played the trailer yet. We're chuckling as if we have. I love it. Right. It's brilliant.
It's all very television. Well, radio.
Radio.
It was fantastic. So this is the last episode before we do whatever we do at Odd Camp or the live event.
And we don't know because it's an unconference.
Yes.
Yeah, who knows what's going
to
happen.
But that's not to say we're not unorganised. It's just an unconference.
Unorganised or disorganised?
It fits better with unconference if it's unorganised.
Yes, boss.
Yes.
So when do we get, what? When is it, where is it, everything?
Well, you've heard that, most of that in the trailer, of course. But
the trailer that we just heard.
Yeah, that we just heard. So let's not bother repeating that bit.
Yeah, I knew that.
But doors do open at 10:30, and there's a welcome at 10:45, and the first proper session starts at 11 a.m.
Yeah. That's a bit organised.
And it's first come, first served entry.
We have to say that.
Tony keeps saying that because he's really twitchy that there's going to be a queue round the block, and I really don't think we're going to have
I think it will all be fine.
Yeah, there's 72 confirmed on Facebook.
Yes. Which is really good.
How much room have we got?
The main room holds 100 and the other two rooms to hold 35. Wow. So, you know, if there are people who haven't put their name on Facebook, then there will be more people than that, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it'll be all right. I don't think we're going to have to turn people away, but, you know, better safe than sorry and all that.
Absolutely.
But just to as a motivation to help people get there and get there on time, if you donate to Odd Camp as you're coming in, you can, if you donate a fiver, you can have a limited edition Odd Camp mug as a reward.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do we get one for free?
I think we might be able to get one for free.
Hang on a minute.
Depends how much money we make back on this.
We're paying for the hotel room.
Yeah.
Is this some cunning plan? We're not actually getting people to buy mugs. We're telling them to donate and we give them a prize.
Yes. Well, reward. Right. It's like the FOSDEM sponsorship returns. You donate so much, you get a T-shirt. With us, it's mugs.
Right.
And it's going to be very nice.
And it's worth it because you can use it throughout the day then.
Yes, you can use your drinks that we are supplying in the mugs. It'll be brilliant. So come along with the fivers in your sticky little mitts and give us the cash on the way and pick up a mug. Nice one.
But you don't have to. It's voluntary. Yeah.
It is voluntary. This is
just an attempt to not have to pay for the entire hotel ourselves.
Yes.
It's a break-even attempt.
And also, spread the love and spread the mugs.
Yes. They are cool mugs.
Because you don't really want to have to bring them home again.
Not really.
And make sure you take all the drinks with you as well.
Yeah. If we have any left, we'll have a Greek-style mug smashing.
No!
Just to ensure that they're really limited edition.
Yeah.
Fab's done a fantastic design for it.
Yeah, they are great.
We should talk to us. We should say thank you to our sponsors as well.
Who are on the mug.
Right, they're the Open Learning Centre.
Yes.
Bitfolk.
Yep.
Canonical.
Viglin.
And, of course, Viglin, yeah.
Okay. And?
Media Partner.
Yeah.
Which makes me smile because I've got no idea what that means.
It means that they're putting an advert in their magazine.
Oh, yes.
Full page advert, apparently.
We're linking to them. Now, hopefully, no, I'm just checking my date. No, subscribers to Linux Format will get the issue just before the event with the full page advert in it. But it should look really good. Again, Fab did a great job of designing that. And Linux Emporium are sponsoring us as well. And an addition since the last episode, which I know we haven't got in our notes, is Pokebook. The fantastic new social networking site. It is brilliant. It's beyond words.
Is it pokebook.co.uk?
Pokebook.co.uk. It's fantastic. I mean, I've been on there for hours. You just lose all sense of time. It's amazing.
Words can't explain how I feel about Pokebook.
It's a whole new lease of life.
Yeah. How long have you had your login for Pokebook now?
I registered really early on. Yeah. I was one of the first, so I actually got Popey on Pokebook.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you to all of our sponsors. We couldn't do it without you. And we'll look forward to seeing you all, hopefully, at Odd Camp.
Yeah, and if you want to chat to us before then, join us in the IRC channel, #OggCamp, on the Freenode Network.
Yeah, and Twitter identica is OggCamp.
And now it's time for Command Line Love.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Oh, I've missed that.
Have you?
Yeah.
Huh, right.
I do like the way that you're able to invoke giggles in Laura when you do that.
As long as it's, no. What's in the segment this week?
Right, this is an interesting variation on a theme. Eject, I don't know if you tried this, you can eject your DVD or CD player.
With the eject
using
command.
The eject command.
Yes.
And there's a great little, if you use eject hyphen or minus T, it basically goes to the CD-ROM, and if it's closed, it ejects it, and if it's ejected, it closes it.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is quite fun. Uh-huh. If you are sat at work and bored, and you know your kids are at home, you can log into your house and make their CD drives do weird and funky things, and then they complain over IM, which is always good for a laugh when you're bored. Well, anyway, if you've got a USB stick, and sometimes you need to eject it and then put it back in again, and all this command, which was nicely found by Popey from our supporting site, commandlinefoo.com.
All right.
No.
It's your segment, mate.
So the command, basically, which Pope will possibly put on the show notes.
Yeah, if you not pre-read it.
enables you to eject and then remount a USB stick.
Without having to lift your hand and pull it out.
That's right.
I suppose it's useful if it's plugged in the back of your machine.
Yeah. And, of course, you could, if you're a GNOME user, or a Kubuntu user, you could make a little button and put this on somewhere on your desktop. So you never have to actually retype it. You just push the button and it does it.
And prevents wear on the connectors as well.
Yeah.
It does.
Okay, if you can contrive any other reasons, let us know. Podcast ubuntu-uk.org. Any reasons for not pulling the USB stick out?
Okay, something which we've seen an increase in this last year or so is hackerspace. So we've actually managed to grab a bunch of people here to actually tell us what it actually is. So who have we actually got here? Sorry, what's your name?
I go by Dorothy Gale, because I'm not in Kansas anymore.
Okay.
And it's Jeffrey Rowe.
Robert Fitzsimons.
Oh, okay, that's great. Can you actually tell us what it actually is? I mean, you know, it's something we've heard about, but we have no idea what it is.
Well, a hackerspace is just a technology collective. We have a space that's open 24/7 to our members, and they're allowed to work on projects, use the wisdom of the community for their projects, and have a lot of fun. What's it mean to you, Rob?
It's actually a kind of a renewed philosophy or concept based on things that happened in the 80s, and maybe, I mean, I might be wrong in the days, like with the Loft and... It's an international concept in terms of there's lots of hackerspaces around the world. So we've got Ireland, Seabase in MetaLab in Austria, and I don't know if there's many in the UK at the moment. I know there's some groups, but I don't know if they actually physically have spaces yet at the moment.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
So just so I understand it correctly, it's somewhere where anyone can go at any point of any day?
Yes and no. It depends on the local... kind of structure that the hackerspace decides. Is it going to be open to the public? Is it going to be private members only? But it all depends.
Well, with our specific space, it's open 24/7.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the space that you do have here. Where is it? Where is it?
It's at 40 Aaron Quay. That's over on Galifi, on the north side of Dublin. We've had the space now for almost 6 months. We started as a group back in January. It took us about 3 months to get a space that we liked. We're now up to around 24, 26 members and a lot of potential people that want to join up. They're all dues-paying members as well. It's a great little space. It consists of three major rooms, has internet activity, nice workbenches, areas for people to get together in private or, you know, with the whole group.
So what sort of projects would people actually be bringing to your space?
That's the best thing about our space, is that it is a blank canvas to do whatever you want. We have people that are working on everything from, say, working on macrame to, like, a knitting project, with knitting electronics into projects. We have people who are making LED towers, people that are working with robotics, people that are coding, people that are developing websites, the whole gamut of any kind of geeky interest you could have. For instance, me and Jeff here are going to be starting to work on making guitar amplifiers and effects pedals.
Okay, so Jeff, what's your interest in guitars? Are you a musician?
No.
I'm stealing him.
I've got the electronics background, so that's where I'm coming in. No musical background whatsoever.
Okay, so how are the guitar amps that you're going to be working on different from what I could buy from Marshall or whatever?
It's about a level of customization. You know, you can only buy what Marshall have, you know. You know, where when I'm going to create it, I'm going to create it for the sounds the end user wants. So does he want it heavily tone based? Does he want distortion? So it's more customizing the product for the end user, which will be ourselves. It's not a product for sale. It's all about creating products for us.
Can it help me play the guitar better?
No.
No, you're horrible.
Ah, damn it. Oh, that's me screwed then.
Well, you could make a project with, say, maybe something like an Arduino and a Wii guitar or something, perhaps. I mean, that sounds like a fun project in the works there, Tony.
Yeah. There is actually, I think, a Hackspace in Southampton, where I live, or Hackspace in Southampton. Is it an international collective?
No, we're not linked to any one ideology. Everybody runs their hacker spaces differently. There is a framework that we followed that was provided by members of the CCC that we followed. We kind of take some basic tenets and rules from them, setting up the space and the availability that we're going to provide and the services that we're going to provide in the space. But it's pretty much, again, it's pretty much what anybody wants to do or what that collective wants to do.
Well, there is sort of international collaborations. Everyone follows kind of design patterns, where there's a general set of principles of what will work and what won't work. So it's all the things that people have learned from their experience of setting up spaces, and they share with the community so other spaces don't fall into the same traps as previous spaces.
So I mean, this actual space you've got set aside, presumably that's rented or you've got, you know, bought or something like that. But even so, there must be some sort of quite large expense to that. How is it actually funded? I mean, is it sponsorship? Or?
All the members pay essentially a membership fee. We have, it's quite expensive actually. We'd love it to be a lot less than this, but it's €50 a month. I'm not even sure what that is, pounds, £40?
Yeah, about that.
It's about £40. £40, €50 a month. And that covers all our costs, so covering our rent, gas, electricity, internet access, council rates. we're not in the position yet to be fundraising for stuff, you know, like one of the hackerspace, NYC Resistor, they have a laser, you know, the laser etching machine. So there are things, but they're very expensive. So we have more mundane things to be spending money on. The other issue is it is relatively expensive because we're in Dublin City, the capital city, to rent. So other locations actually can probably charge far less in terms of their membership fee, because their rents are going to be inherently less than ours would be. But it doesn't preclude most of our members. I think there is some, everybody's going to have difficulties in this recession, but most people seem to be able to justify it to themselves and are making good use of the space as well.
Okay, so I'm quite new, so I'm only visiting Dublin for, say, a weekend or something. If I wanted to work on a project whilst I was here, would I be able to turn up and contribute just and pay for like the weekend or something?
Well, the best thing to do is we have a website, tog.ie, tog.ie. To go onto the website, ask, is there anybody going to be in the space? Even though the space is available 24/7, all members have keys, but nobody is there 24/7. So it's more of a case of, if somebody wants to come and visit or wants to come and join in a project, we have a kind of a blog page that shows, like, if any, or check the mailing list. Or the best place is actually to join in the IRC room to see who's around.
What's your IRC channel?
It's on Freenode. It's hash tog.
Easy to remember. So if I'm interested in doing some hardware hacking or working on some cool electronics project, but I'm not an electronics engineer and I haven't got a A-level in it or something, can I get help?
Of course. Whatever the community can offer you, we will be happy to give. Everyone's working collaboratively on some projects. We're not all working together in one singular project. But if there's someone there with the knowledge and they want to share it, there's no reason why they wouldn't provide it.
That's the sort of thing. We have a lot of members who actually don't know about these particular topics. So we started what are essentially group nights, where people would assemble in a group who are interested in the same topic. So, you know, we have beginners to experts ranging. So, like, an example would be on Monday we run our microcontroller night, where anyone interested in microcontrollers can come along and go, hey, I'm trying to get this working, can anyone give me a hand? So we're trying to run event nights or group nights to try and bring the general level of the group up to a higher standard.
Who are your members? I mean, I would have said, you know, hardware hacking is you know, the long-haired hippies with beards tinkering with sort of breadboards and circuit boards and stuff. But
have
you guys
seen
are
an episode of the A-Team. That's pretty much what you look like. We have,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's even
better. We're just from all the walks of life. Everyone who's there. I mean, we have people that work in business jobs. We have people who don't have jobs. We have people that, you know, work in just about every field of life who just have a genuine interest in technology.
Have you, each of you got a favorite project that you've done?
I think right now Rob would be the best one to talk about a favorite project.
I've kind of been interested in using LEDs and lasers and things like that. So I think some of you have probably seen the videos on YouTube of an LED cube, you know, where you get LEDs and you kind of put them into a structure in a cube shape. A couple of months ago, we got invited to attend a software development conference, Epicenter here in Dublin, and I kind of said, I'm going to build a project, and I was going to build an LED cube. I said, that's too small, I need to make it bigger. So I built an LED cube which was four times bigger, but it was like four LED cubes tacked on top of each other, and it's a LED tower. And I spent, I don't know, I only did about a month. Some of the guys helped me with some of it, but like a lot of late nights and one or two sleepovers.
So how many evenings a week do you go out to the Hackspace and then, you know, tinker?
Regularly, I usually just attend the microcontroller Mondays and the program on Wednesdays, but I go if other people are there. So if anybody wants to go there and says, I want to be there on Thursday night, well, there's a good chance I'll probably go on a Thursday night.
It's open 24/7. You can go and come, please, whenever you want. You can be there on Christmas Day at 2 o'clock in the morning. Nothing's stopping you.
I would be. Unfortunately, I live somewhere else. What's it actually like, the space? I mean, I've got this vision that's a kind of a mixture of something with beanbags and ambient lighting and a garden shed full of electronics and soldering irons. Is that about right?
If you could ditch it into an office space, then yes.
Right, okay.
It's basically in a Georgian building. It's kind of, you know, your 3-4-story kind of building. We're on the second floor. We've got three roughly the same size rooms. They're about 12 square meters each. One of the first projects we built was we spent some time building some benches. So we got a load of wood and plywood and built the benches.
So you're carpenters as well as electronics geeks.
Yeah, I think we were only just the other day trying to get some insurance for the space. And you're trying to explain to an insurance man, what do we do in the space? And he kind of came up, so it's like a school workshop. I was basically saying, yeah, if you take a woodwork room, a metalwork room, a science lab, a computer lab, and a home economics room and put them all together, that's kind of what the space is potentially useful for. You know, all of those in them.
And was he happy with that?
He hasn't got back to me with a quote yet. Okay, so.
Yeah. it'll be like insuring a 60-year-old Rolls Royce, probably.
There's something that we're starting on right now. It's a lot of life coaching stuff. I'm going to be giving a workshop on how to maximize your CV and deal with recruiters in Dublin to get jobs. So there's really nothing stopping anyone from coming up with a good idea, and if people get behind it, that's something that we do. So it's not limited to electronics.
I was going to say, so you're looking beyond kind of even electronics or even the physical element of craft. You're looking at soft skills, to use the jargon.
Exactly.
Excellent. Okay, so we talked about your IRC channel and the website, but is there anywhere else people can find out more if they want to get involved?
I think probably the most reference for the guys in the UK is actually to go to the hackerspaces.org website. There are a number of groups in the UK that are involved, and I don't know if many of them have actually physical spaces, but I do know that they meet up in pubs, which is exactly what we did. We'd go to a pub, break out, you know, the tools, and you're sitting there for 3 or 4 hours and you're kind of getting all these funny looks across the bar. Why are these people using laptops, you know? But I think that's the best thing, hackerspaces.org.
So hang on, did you have your pie, your chips and a pint followed by your soldering iron on the pub bar, sat at a stool?
Yeah. Like, we're all, a lot of us that were originally involved were active in the kind of 2600 meetup space. So we've been doing essentially this for a long time, but without being able to work together in a very collaborative way. So it's for us, it's an extension on that, but we've been able to rope in far more through the iLogs or the Linux user groups and the OSS bar camps and those types of groups.
So now you've got a space to do it all in, and you haven't got to clutter up the pub with it.
We still go to the pub.
Oh yeah, but you don't have to take your soldering iron with you.
It's probably in the bag.
Well, thank you very much indeed for talking to us, gentlemen, and we better go on and enjoy the rest of the party now.
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks so much. Luck. Cheers.
Thank you.
So we've got two competitions this episode. One to win the Beginning Ubuntu Linux book that I reviewed earlier, and one to win the Front-End Drupal book that Simon reviewed earlier. So if you want to win the Beginning Ubuntu Linux book, you need to answer this question. What was the name of the other book we reviewed by Kia Thomas? This season?
No, last season.
Last season.
I think.
We've done so many seasons now. It's so difficult to tell.
It was in the first two seasons.
Yeah. And if you want to win Front-End Drupal, what was the name of the episode in which we interviewed Emma Jane Hogbin?
The name of the episode.
The name of the episode, not the number.
Well, yeah, or maybe both, but yeah.
It has to be the name.
Has to be the name. Has to be the name.
Has to be the name.
Laura has spoken.
So the closing date for entries is the 2nd of November.
Send your answers to competition@ubuntu-uk.org.
And sadly, we'll only ship to the UK and Europe.
Good luck, everybody.
It's time for the Ecosphere.
Yeah.
Is that the best you could do? I thought you were going to protest strongly at Ecosphere.
This is as strong as I can protest right now.
Okay.
It's normally Dave that comes up with the really silly names for this segment, so he's not here this time.
Okay. Someone else want to step up to the mark and come up with a silly name?
I'm not as silly as Dave. I can't possibly help.
I don't know. We're in that T-shirt.
Don't Meow. Okay, so what's in the meowosphere?
Now you're just being silly.
It's the only way.
Okay, so Tanner Helland is back with a comprehensive set of 10 features he and probably a lot of other people would like to see in Ubuntu 8.10. Sorry, 10.10. 8.10.
Yeah.
Long time ago. Okay, so what's on the list?
Loads.
Okay.
Actually, loads. And it's not just 10, because he's divided up into 10 separate posts. And then within those, there's loads of individual things that are kind of grouped together.
I see number 5 is our good old favourite, solid functional video editing.
Yes.
He obviously hasn't used the OpenShot video editor.
That we now must say nice things about, yes, before they make a video.
Make another video of us with clown heads.
Yeah, some of them are quite, you know, the usual kind of things like make it look nicer and make a music player that's great and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Why? Yeah, he talks about the paper cuts as well, doesn't he?
Why Ubuntu 10.10 and not 10.4?
Because it's a year away.
Oh, just because.
Yeah, just, I don't know.
I guess, seemed unambitious, that, really.
Well, I don't know, because it's 10 things, so it's 10 things about 10.10. Yeah, kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
And plus a year is a nice target to go for. Plus the other thing is 10.04 is LTS, and so you can expect LTS to be a bit more conservative.
Yeah, that's
like boring.
I didn't say that. You said that. I didn't say that.
Ubuntu developers have been reporting pain whilst testing, as the repositories are very busy just after a beta release.
Yeah. One of the problems is the developers keep rebuilding stuff and they have to pull in packages. And because the beta released, and once the beta released, people are testing stuff, so the developers have got to work on it and fix it. And the repositories slow down a bit because everyone's downloading updates.
So a lot of people wait till a beta before doing any testing and then find a load of bugs.
Yeah,
and then people using it,
and then the guys can't work on it. Yeah,
yeah.
And then there was some talk. I'll put a link to the. I might put a link before anyone says anything.
Rash promises.
Yeah, I thought I'd get that in there. I might put a link to the discussion in the developer list. And they were talking about things like maybe having a preferred set of mirrors that's only allowed. Only developers are allowed in.
Oh.
So they get, you know, the bandwidth to themselves, and they get the server to themselves, kind of thing. That kind of thing. Maybe if you're in a certain group or, you know, something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sounds like an idea.
Maybe if you're a Motu or something.
Yeah. Oh, you know what that is?
Yeah. I remember talking to Daniel Holbach about it.
Ah, okay.
On the telephone.
Ubuntu has a new community council.
Yeah, I've heard they let any old chap in these days.
Apparently so.
Congratulations, Poppy.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Alan has managed to con his way into being elected to the community council.
Yeah. What is the community council, and what are you doing on it?
What do you plan to do on it?
Well, according to the website, he says, trying to remember what on earth the community council is. According to the website, right, okay. It says the social structures and community processes of Ubuntu are supervised by the Community Council. It's the CC that approves the creation of new teams and projects and appoints team leaders. In addition, the CC is the body responsible for the code of conduct and tasked with ensuring that maintainers and other community members follow its guidelines. So basically,
Ubuntu police.
Yeah.
Excellent.
We lay the smack down on people.
The moral guardians of Ubuntu.
Yes.
Well, you weren't the only person to be elected at this round of elections. There are several others, including a bit of a who's who of a former Ubuntu UK podcast interviewee guests.
Really?
Because Richard Johnson, who we interviewed earlier this season, Mike Basinger, who we interviewed in the first season, and Daniel Holbach, who we interviewed on the phone. I think those are all the people that we've had, but there are quite a few names on the list.
Yeah.
Congratulations to everybody who got
it.
It's quite an important role. You have to go to meetings every couple of weeks and stuff, don't you?
Yeah, every 2 weeks there's an online IRC meeting. Well, part of the reason why there's more people in the CC now is to make it easier for it to be quorum, have a quorum at the meeting, because previously there weren't. There was often times when people couldn't get to the meeting and then there weren't enough people to make any decisions and stuff. So now there's more people, right. So there's more chance of that happening.
So are you on the CC forever? How long does your term last?
2 years. So the reason why that we had this vote is because the people who were previously on it expired after 2 years.
Okay.
And then we had a vote. Well, they didn't,
they didn't expire.
They didn't all expire. They just, their membership of the CC expired.
Is it true you have to polish Jono's shoes?
No, absolutely not. He has to polish ours.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, I like that.
He's paid to do it.
Yeah.
TomTom is constructing a series of all-in-one car navigation systems. Those devices are running Linux, so they have been a target for experimentation and hacking. I've had a TomTom Go 300 for years, and I remember going in there and I changed the boot screen to have one with a tux on it.
Oh.
That was about as far as my hacking got. So they've been a target for experimentation and hacking, including an open operating software version called OpenTom. But there's a step further now because somebody's reverse engineered the voice pack.
Actually, it's about 2 years old. I stumbled across this post, and it is quite old, I think. I'm pretty sure it's a couple of years old. But yeah, it turns out that the voice files are just OGs, like packed together.
Oh,
a bunch of OG files packed together. So I thought maybe we should perhaps make one.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Turn left. Hiya. You reach your destination.
If we all do it in Laura's voice.
Apart from Laura.
Apart from you. Yeah, you have to do it. In
We're bound to end up being hit, probably.
So, yeah, we'll have a go at making one. Just put it on the website.
George Foreman. George Formby. George Foreman's
George Foreman's the grill.
Cleaning windows. Well, let's give it a go and see if anybody's interested in downloading it. And then you can listen to us, give them directions and help them get lost.
Would we get blamed, though, if they got lost?
Only if we deliberately put the turn left and turn right in the wrong places. Which could be fun.
Yeah. And that's all that's in the meowosphere this time.
It's time for your feedback. We've had an email from Mark Laws, who writes in and says,
just wanted to air my views on the Ubuntu software. I think the idea of a Ubuntu software store, I assume that is. I think the idea of a simplified Synaptic is brilliant. However, I strongly disagree with the idea of including non-free software. In my opinion, paying for software in Ubuntu goes against its core principles. Whilst the user still has a choice to install software, which is a cost, I think this opens the floodgates for commercial, non-free applications to be bought into Ubuntu. In my view, this would confuse the new user that has been told that software for Ubuntu is free. Also, how long until Nvidia charges to install proprietary graphics drivers through the software store?
Hmm.
Number of sort of interesting issues there.
Yeah. Well, nobody says that told that software for Ubuntu is free. We say that Ubuntu itself is free.
Yeah, true.
And we kind of say that you can get everything for free on it. But, I mean, there's no reason why there can't be a filter on the store that lists only free stuff.
Yeah, and have a tick box for show me commercial evil stuff.
Yeah. Well,
that's kind of how it works at the moment, isn't it, when you do search?
Yeah, but it's on by default.
Yeah.
The multiverse stuff is on by default. Mm. But this is he's talking about not non-free in the FSF sense, but non-free in the cost sense, I think.
NVIDIA don't charge for Windows drivers, do they?
No, but I think he's just saying, you know,
They could do.
There is something down the journey towards evil pay-for software.
So if Ubuntu update the Ubuntu software store, is it just going to stay with Ubuntu, or is it going to get passed to other distros? Is it going to get to Debian?
I think it's an upstream project, isn't it? It's not Ubuntu specific.
That's why it's called, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called Software Center. It's not called Ubuntu Software Center.
Hmm.
So in theory,
you won't be able to say Ubuntu. Blah. and go to Debian
and flounce off and to flounce somewhere else.
Off somewhere else because they'll get it will still be in Debian.
Yeah. Although I'm guessing Debian probably won't run their own software store for commercial applications or for you know paid for applications.
No,
probably.
But they might take the GUI for you know for doing free stuff.
Yeah,
and then patch out the bit that says price.
We interviewed Neil from the Open Mailer Project on the last show, and he sent us a voicemail.
Hi, Laura, Tony, Dave, Simon and Alan. I just wanted to give you an audio thank you for having me on the podcast, episode 13 of season 2, to talk about my dental software project, Open Molar. As a result of that exposure, the project took a giant leap forwards in a direction that I would have never foreseen. A gent named Philippe Le Toquin, excuse my pronunciation, caught me on IRC and said he would like to use the Launchpad tools to translate the application into French. 2 weeks later and the job is done. Philippe has translated over 600 phrases. If your default language and default environment is set as French, OpenMolar will start in the French interface now. You can also choose a language at runtime, selecting either French or English from the menu. Well, the reason I'm sending this audio is because I think it proves the power of free software. This functionality is of absolutely no use to me. I failed my French O-level twice, but it demonstrates the flexibility that you get out of the box. People contribute stuff to customize the software, and everyone's a winner. To my knowledge, this is the only bilingual dental database software on the market, and the breaking news is a Spanish version may be forthcoming. A chap from South America contacted me also. I've outlined the steps taken to translate the app on http://openmolar.wiki.com/translation, and many thanks to Launchpad for providing such good translation facilities. Another couple of contacts I've had since the show was the two Alans from the Open Learning Centre, who are considering doing some sysadmin support for future Open Molar practices, and Chris from texttools.co.uk, who discussed the possible addition of SMS text messaging services to the app. So, thanks again. Keep up the great work on the podcast. Congrats to Alan on his recent election. And a toast to Karmic, which appears to be the best Ubuntu yet by a country mile. Au revoir, Neil Zerroing Golfer.
That's really good. It's good to see that we've helped raise the profile of his project, and now he's got translated in other languages as well.
This means that people actually listen to the show and pay attention.
Well, one person has.
Yeah, that's quite a scary thought anyway. Similarly, we've had a voicemail from Phil Willoughby about his OpenCycle project.
The idea behind OpenCycle team is that it's a cycle team which anyone can join. You don't need to get anyone's permission or anything. You just need to get a OpenCycle team shirt and wear it. And simply by doing that, you're part of the OpenCycle team. And we've posted the designs for those jerseys on our website, opencycleteam.org. And if you wish to get a jersey to join the OpenCycle team, you can just download those artwork files and send them to any jersey printer in the world. Pretty much get it printed in whatever colours you like, or even get something else printed and stick our name on it. It doesn't really matter. And just by doing that, you're part of the OpenCycle team. We needed some other logos on there to make it look more like a professional cycling jersey. So we looked at the products we use and the ones we get value from, and particularly the ones that are free to acquire and free for everyone to use. And we decided that we wanted to promote Ubuntu because that's something we all value very much. Basically, we put the Ubuntu logo down the side panels of our jersey, and we're very pleased with the result. The whole thing looks very much like a properly designed cycle jersey would. Really, I threw it together in a couple of hours one evening.
That's rather cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Might get one of those. Very nice when I'm blatting to and from work on my push iron in the mornings.
Yeah, I probably won't get one.
No. That's right, you've got a bike.
Well, my bike was stolen.
Yeah. And he hadn't installed the software package on it that tells... Anyway, yeah.
On the last episode, there was a comment about juice not working correctly, which I can't actually remember. But juice
somebody said that it just kept downloading on our show over and over again.
Repeatedly downloaded, yeah.
Yeah, so Albert sent in an email saying...
I was listening to episode 14, heard the comment about juice not working correctly. I'm using Juice. I'm using Juice version 2.2 on Windows, and it definitely downloads the last four Ubuntu UK podcasts every day. Actually, if I manually get it to check for an update, it downloads them again. So today, I've downloaded the last four podcasts twice. Sorry for messing up the stats.
So that's why it looks like we've downloaded so many.
I don't have the problem with it. he says, I don't have the problem with it only partially downloading them. This doesn't appear to be happening with any of my other podcasts that Juice manages for me.
I wonder if it's because we have our funky mirror thing that points the client. It points the client at a different mirror, and I have a feeling he's getting load balanced onto a different mirror, and Juice records the full URL of the file you got, not the URL, the original URL. So I think that could be it.
For HTTP fans, I think we use a 302 redirect, don't we?
Get you.
So, yes. That could be. And that okay, that would make some sense.
I've got a Windows VM.
Okay.
And I'll try it, and I'll point it through my proxy server to see what addresses it's going to.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, I'll do that.
And we had a couple of emails from other people, Richard Hillebrink and Mark Westwood, who have the same problem. Richard, or rather bravely, runs Juice on Windows under Wine, on Linux under Wine, which is
novel.
Yeah, he says the same problem exists there, so that's consistent at least, I suppose.
And apparently on F1Weekly.com.
Yeah, so we're not the only ones. Maybe that's a compare and contrast exercise for Alan there. Ken Peter has tweeted us, or dented us, to say,
I remember UPC talked about automate transcription before, so I wonder if you guys know any transcription software, e.g. for lecture audio. It wasn't automatic. It was manual.
Yes.
It was very manual.
But it was a nice manual, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite a pleasant process. Yeah, you listen to it, pause it, type what it said, listen to another bit, type another bit, type who it was that said it. It's very manual.
What was it called?
It was called
something very obvious, wasn't it?
Translate.
Something like Transcriber or something like
that. I think
it
is called Transcriber, yes. But if you go to our website, I think there's a...
Are we going to link to it in the show notes?
Wasn't there a link on the Launchpad project for translating podcasts or something?
As we all type apt-cache search. Yes, Transcriber.
Yes.
And finally, Jacob from the US says...
Why is it always me?
He didn't say that.
That would be a bizarre email to get.
I came across something funny that would make a good bit on the show. It's a website for kitten adoption. He says that the HTML is so foul, it segfaults any Ubuntu machine with an NVIDIA card.
Nice.
The code looks like it was generated with Netscape for Windows 98. It happens on both my Ubuntu machines, it's home and work, and by a couple of people on the Ubuntu forums. And Alan will put the link to the website.
I probably won't make it a link. I'll probably just put the piece of text, just in case anyone accidentally clicks it and then sues me.
I tried it on my laptop and it didn't actually crash it, but it is a horrible page. It's really bad
HTML.
Have you got
NVIDIA?
No.
Oh, that would be why.
Well, yeah.
Oh, look, it's 10:45. Tony's getting grumpy.
Well, there we go. That's all your feedback this time.
Well, thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone who took part via Twitter and Identica and sent us emails. If you'd like to get hold of us, you can email the show via podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
You can leave us a voicemail in a number of ways. Telephone 0845 508 1986 or VoIP podcast@sip.ubuntu-uk.org, and finally Skype us at Ubuntu UK Podcast.
If you're into the microblogging, you can send us your comments and get updates from recording sessions on Identica or Twitter, where we are at UUPC.
Alternatively, if you're into IRC, you can chat to us via the #Ubuntu-UK-podcast channel on the Freenode IRC network.
Now, we were told we had to promote this more heavily.
Yes, Josh Holland said there's not enough people in there and he needs to invoke his English pedantry more on more people.
So that's #Ubuntu-UK-podcast.
Join our Facebook fan page, search for Ubuntu UK Podcast.
We welcome just a moment, command line loves, reviews or rants and feedback, both positive and negative, so please do get in touch.
Thanks also to our network of community mirrors listed on the website.
They are.
They are.
Finally.
I was just going to make sure that I didn't say it wrong like I did last time.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
What did you say wrong?
Something like our community of network mirrors. And you all laughed at me. So we hope to see as many of you as possible at OgCamp.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next episode's coming from OgCamp.
Scary.
We'll see you there.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.